everybody. Great to have you on board. My guest is coming up in just a moment, and he is one of my favorite guests. Just love when I can talk with him. But first, I want to tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by New Works Plumbing of Sacramento, locally owned for over 20 years. Whether it's leak detection, water line repair, plumbing repair, bathroom plumbing, New Works is a full service plumbing solution. No matter how small or how large your plumbing problem, they've got a fix for you. And remember, if you happen to have an emergency in the middle of the night, no problem. New Works will be there with their 24/7 service. Again, that's newworksplumbing.com, N-E-W-W-R-X plumbing for all of your plumbing needs and repairs. My guest grew up in El Dorado Hills. He played high school for Oak Ridge. They won a state championship playing at Arco Arena, and one of the games leading up to that was against Colin Kaepernick's team, and he and Ryan Anderson put on a show that day, and then he ended up at Cal Berkeley. He was a first-round pick of the Nets back in 2008, played over a decade in the NBA, and now he is a very happy father and husband, two young children. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome to the podcast Ryan Anderson. Ryan, it is so great to catch up with you, my friend. How are you?
Grant, it is always great to talk to you. I've missed you, man. I'm really great. Like you said, two kids, chasing them around all day. It is it is the best, but I have zero regrets. I can't imagine still, you know, if I was still playing and not having this time with them. It's really a blessing to be able to be a stay-at-home dad right now, Graham.
That's awesome. I'm no, so happy for you. Man. Yeah, you're going to be a stay-at-home dad, but there are going to be days where you're going to be like, gosh, I was on the road for a three-game trip right now.
Oh, literally, I was just talking to one of my old trainers and this morning, actually, and he I'm like, man, I miss the travel. That's the one thing I miss the most is just picking up and going to, you know, like you said, for a three-day trip or going to some great cities, New York or something, and then coming straight home. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about it a little bit before, but having no regrets later on when they're older and out of the house, I'll always be able to have these moments here with these kids and they're going to remember their dad being around, which makes me happy.
Ryan, what impact did the Sacramento Kings have on you as a kid growing up and becoming interested in the sport of basketball?
That's a great question. Well, you had a huge impact on me, Grant. I mean, you made it exciting. I mean, but absolutely every aspect of it. Slamson, you know, was just the best mascot in the NBA. The cowbells, the fans, it's the best arena, best fans in the NBA, and just to be in a small town where that was kind of the only show really had all the impact in the world to me, basketball wise. Cause my parents, I'm sure we've talked about it before, but my parents aren't super athletes or, you know, I never grew up in a sports oriented family. So my access to basketball was turning on the TV, listening to your voice, seeing, watching guys like Mitch Richmond or obviously during those glory years, watching, Jason Williams do around the back passes and Vlade and Peja, and those guys became sort of my inspiration to just fall in love with the game. So I'm so grateful to grow up where I did, but to have the Kings there meant everything.
You grow up in California, you go to college at Cal Berkeley, and then in 2008, a team that drafts you is on the other side of the country with the New Jersey Nets. And it's everyone's dream to get drafted. And I know that was a dream of yours. Was that a challenging transition for you at that time? Or were you so darn excited to be in the NBA? Really, no matter where you were.
It's really funny because it just automatically puts me into a story about draft night where I'm kind of huddled up on this chair waiting for my name to be announced. And I was anywhere from, I'd say probably, well, the Kings had the 10th pick, so I thought maybe there was a long shot. So maybe 10 through 30. So, you know, there were a couple R names like Roy Hibbert, you know, and so I'm on the edge of my seat getting ready. I think he was 18th pick, but so yeah, the 21st pick, I get picked and I'm running around the neighborhood, and you know where I grew up, Grant. It's like pretty small town, especially back then. Now it's a massive town, this awesome city now, but everybody comes out because they hear me screaming, and they're all watching the draft too because they know I'm in it. And everybody comes out, and I'm screaming on my lawn, you know, just kicking, screaming. Everybody's chasing after me. It was this exciting thing. And then I go inside, and my mom's crying in the kitchen just by herself. And the reason is because I was going to be too far away, you know, from home. So, I stayed close to home, going to Berkeley. And honestly, I mean, Berkeley was I loved my experience there. I love the campus. I love the Bay Area. But, you know, Berkeley has some pretty interesting parts. So that kind of helped me grow up and see what a different kind of life looked like. So I'm fortunate for my experience in Berkeley, seeing a whole lot of different characters out there. So it sort of jump-started me to be more comfortable, obviously, going anywhere. And obviously, I wanted to fulfill my dream. So going to New Jersey was intimidating, but at the same time, just the excitement of doing something, fulfilling a dream that I never in my life thought would ever be possible, you know, far outweighed everything else. And also my best friend growing up actually came out with me and lived with me, which helped a lot. And that was from the recommendation of the NBA, actually, to bring somebody familiar along, because being 19, going out to the big city, or at least living near the big city, close to New York where we moved, was pretty intimidating, but like I said, absolutely exciting.
I want to talk about people in the NBA that have had a huge impact on your life, and I want to start with Monty Williams. I say Monty Williams, mm-hmm. and you say what?
Oh, man. There's not one word I could say. There's a hundred, but I would say absolutely the best leader I've ever been around in my life. Just a rock. He was a foundation, solid rock for me during the most difficult part of my life, with the loss of my girlfriend at the time and her suicide. And there's no stronger person on the planet that I've ever been around than him. Obviously, he's a great coach, and he showed that. Showed that especially during these past, you know, these recent years. But he's just such a strong Christian man, just him picking you up with his one arm. I remember, during that time, it was hard for me to even get around and you know, especially right after it happened, walk. And I called him first when it all happened. When the suicide actually happened, because I had nobody in town. And so he comes and he picks me up at midnight, one bare arm, picks me up along with our security guard. And there was no better person in that time in the entire world to pick me up than him. And it's hard to explain that unless you actually experience it, but there's really not words. It's just his demeanor, his presence, his love, and I could go on and on and on, but that guy was there for me during the most difficult time of my life, when a coach could have called somebody else, or just, you know, he was there for me. He was there for me many nights, let's just say. So I'm very grateful for him, man.
The death of your girlfriend back then, how did that change your life?
Oh, man, in so many ways it changed my life. I didn't think I would ever be able to play basketball again, but it strengthened me. It helped me grow into a man, actually. I mean, I kind of went about life. I was 24 or 25 at the time, but I kind of went about life up until that point sort of like oblivious to any issues, any problems. Nothing bad in my childhood ever happened. I mean, growing up in El Dorado Hills, as you know, it's a very safe, friendly, you know, no problems neighborhood. And I didn't have any deaths in my family. I, you know, life was pretty easy. And then obviously, like I said, I accomplish my dream. I go to the NBA. I travel. I get traded. I get a contract to go play for even longer, go to New Orleans. And then this happens, and it's like the world isn't as innocent as I had always thought, you know. So it made me – it definitely made forced me to make the circle of people around me a lot smaller. It helped me to – realize kind of what I need in life rather than just wandering around and doing whatever I wanted or just trying to have this fun, happy life. It's like, no, you actually, you know, life is serious. This stuff happens. And man, it changed me in a whole lot of ways, but it definitely made me appreciate my family just that much more. And, you know, it took a lot of courage for me to get back to playing basketball, and it gave me that passion. And it helped me understand the realization that, you know, once I got on that court, it was the one place, it was my safe place where I could get away and not think about it all day long. You know, I could go on the court and be at home on the court. So it really gave me this crazy love for the game at that point.
I will never forget the time that I interviewed you courtside before a game. And mm-hmm. you were going over everything, and it was a very emotional conversation. It was a very impactful conversation. And then about an hour and a half later, before the game, I'm over near my broadcast position, and a man comes up to me, and he's got tears coming down his eyes. And he said, "I just want to let you know that the interview you had with Ryan Anderson today, I think, saved my life." He said, "I was right where his girlfriend was in Gia." And he goes, "I was actually thinking of ending my life. And after listening to Ryan on your show, I have a completely new outlook." And I actually said, "Hang on here." And you were out warming up on the court. And I said, "Ryan, it would be very important if you would just say hello to the." And you said, "Absolutely." And you spent a minute or two with this person. And I was trying to think as that was going on, how many other people you have impacted in a positive way by sharing your story? And I'm convinced after that night and after our interview and after talking with that man that it has to be numerous. And so if we can always look at a positive coming out of a negative, I really believe that you impacted people's lives. I really believe that in my heart.
Wow, man. I really appreciate that. That story gives me the chills, even though I absolutely remember that. And I mean, that's what it's about, right? It's about helping even just one person. And that I sort of, you know, that was sort of the mission, like you said, just having a, what do you do from that? You know, that was kind of my, after I went through, you know, months and months of trying to ask the questions of why and just get over the emotions of it all. What do we do with that now? You know? So that was the next step in my mind of my mission to sort of not, cause you can't just forget about something like that. So either you just keep thinking about it and get depressed about it, or you try to do something different and there, you know, you try to change something or help somebody. So, I mean, just to hear one person is impacted, or even just hears the story and understands how much that can impact a person, is just means the world. So, I mean, regardless, no matter how many people were helped or even just, you know, second guess doing something to themselves, it was an awesome, it turned into almost a privilege in my mind to have God give me, for that to happen to me, because I had a platform to actually have people hear me, you know, and to be able to talk about that. And it does, not a lot of people have a platform to talk about suicide. And I felt like I, in a way, I was the only guy in the world that had that platform. So it was my duty to talk about it and help people. But I appreciate you saying that, Grant. I mean, that during that time, it was, I was on a mission, man. So to have one person be impacted, man, it still means a lot.
Ryan, you went through the toughest period of your life. Monty Williams was there for you. And then Monty Williams goes through an unimaginable tragedy. He just looked like such a pillar and such a rock. His I mean, I don't even know how to. The eulogy for his wife at the service was one of the most impactful, incredible speeches that I've ever heard in my entire life, and I'm 63. So he was there for you, and then he goes through, an unimaginable tragedy, and I can't even imagine what it was like for you now to go try to lift him up and help him.
It was the craziest experience, Grant. It was hearing that happened, because Ingrid was very much kind of the rock of their household, and that night it all happened for me. Ingrid had she had a relative that committed suicide, so she kind of knew how to. There's no way to know how to handle somebody going through something that traumatic, but she related to it. And so she was telling Monty, you know, Monty went upstairs and I was on their couch the night it all happened. And I heard Ingrid's voice saying, you need to go down there and stay next to him the entire night. Like, you can't leave him alone down there. And, you know, she sat with me and talked with me and tried to just sit there. And what I learned through it all is it's not about saying anything. It's about just being there for people. And that's with most tragedies, just being there with them. And anyway, so Ingrid meant so much to me that night, as well as Monty. And for that to happen to Ingrid was a complete mind. It just rattled my mind. And it was obviously so emotional with the, thank God the kids were okay and everything, but all around, it was a complete 180, like you said. And the amazing timing of it all was, we were playing, I think 2 days after or a day after it happened, we were playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, where he was coaching or assistant coaching. And so it was crazy timing, because we got to be there for him, and we went to his house before the game. And he's so strong. He can't be so super emotional with his kids walking around. That was the hardest part, just seeing his kids walk around. And some of them are so young, they don't know what's going on. It was just, especially having kids now, it makes me want to freaking ball, you know. But the point is, we were there to comfort him and be at least just be there with him. And,
amazing.
And then we played the game that night, and obviously we went out to see his, go to the funeral service. And like you said, he made a massive impact that night, because it was all over the news and all over sports. And, you know, people were pretty amazed that about that man's speech. I mean, you could tell how strong and how incredible that guy is. Yeah, I could go on and on. Sorry, Grant, about Monty. He's great.
Well, I'm glad that you went on and on, because I know what a special human being he is, and I know what an impact that he had on your life. And I remember when you had your serious injury, and we were at the Marina del Rey, Ritz-Carlton, getting ready to play a game, and you were either checking in or checking out with your dad. And you were getting ready to have your surgery. Correct me if I'm wrong. Back surgery, was that correct? Or
it was like a neck surgery.
Neck surgery. Yeah. Neck surgery. Mm-hmm. And then when I had you on my show after that, I said, you know, I said, your life, and you were not even 30 yet, and I said, you've gone through 3 or 4 unbelievable life experiences. In other words, you had already gone through so many trials and tribulations before you were even 30 that I was just thinking, wow, okay, you are due for a blessed life the rest of your way. Did you ever think about everything that happened in your 20s? I mean, what you went through with the suicide of Gia, and then being there for Monty, and then an injury that really we were thinking could be career ending and could affect your life forever, and you weren't even 30 years old yet.
Yeah, I think like I said, you know, after the shock of suicide, it's like I was ready for anything. You know, whatever happens, nothing's going to shock me compared to that. So, yeah, I mean, it is unbelievable. I think I always kind of talk about my life in the NBA, my career in the NBA as sort of, you could probably relate. I mean, I'm sure you can. It's sort of this train that you board, and then you just, you go and you can't really get off and settle. You just, you're constantly on this train and then you stop and you're done. It's like a, I don't even know if that made any sense.
It does. It consumes your life. And then when it's over, you're like, it's almost like,
where did I just go?
Yes, exactly.
Like, what just happened?
Yes.
You know? And and thanks for having my back there, Grant. It definitely, I'm still at that point where I've stopped and I'm like, where did I go? Where did I go on that train? You know? Oh, wow. Yeah, I did have neck surgery. Like, that suicide thing happened, and wow, when I got dropped, I'm still trying to remember significant things. I mean, I wish I had a journal during this time. I wish I was able to write more down. I mean, I probably could be an author by now, Grant, but I wanted to, as healthy as possible, move on past some things. And like you said, I mean, the dream was always just to keep pushing forward. And now I'm providing for my family and that's kind of the focus right now, but it's been a wild journey. I mean, but it is crazy to talk about it, 'cause sometimes I feel like it was another person's life.
Do you have any regrets from your NBA career?
Oh man, what a question, Grant. Yeah, I very much do. I very much do. And it all really is based around the tail end of my career. And I really, this is the thing that I have to preface. I'm so blessed, man. I never thought I'd play in the NBA in my life. I never thought I would make the kind of contract money that I made. I never thought in a million years I'd be living where I live. I have zero complaints with, you know, I can provide for my family for the rest of my life. Boo-hoo, Ryan, you know, but when you have a taste of success and you know you can do more, it kind of eats at you. And that's where if I had any regrets, it would be sort of the tail end of my career in Houston. I had a rough experience in Houston, man. And without talking for hours about it all and getting into some details that organization just was absolutely dysfunctional, and I loved so much of the staff, and you know, I loved everybody, really. I mean, everybody was great, but they kind of treated you like you are a prized cow or something. You know, it's like you're not a person. You know, you're a possession. And of course, that's what basketball is, and you're getting paid a lot of money to play the game. But, you know, you see the best organizations around the league now, and they have, like, look at the best example in the world, Phoenix. It was, when I got traded there, it was a horrible organization, and no connections, no personal values, no, then who do they bring in? And now all of a sudden they're one of the best in the NBA, Monty Williams. San Antonio Spurs, Pop is one of the most caring, personable coaches, who obviously is a brilliant coach, but they're so good because he treats you, he understands, you know, he understands how that you're a human and you make mistakes, and he's going to ride with you through the bumps if you're having a bad shooting slump. Houston, for me, I, you know, when I got paid my contract, I fulfilled what they asked of me. I got far less shots because we had a guy named James Harden who, as you know, was the scoring leader and obviously ball in his hands at all times, and shot clock's running down 5, 4, 3. Oh, I'm going to pass it to Ryan for contested three. You know, those were the shots I was getting. So it was difficult to do what I was doing, where I was getting ISOs or I was getting post-ups on other teams. We had a great run. We were better than we were the year before. Then the next year we were chasing a championship and bringing in Chris Paul. And there's a lot of things that went into that, but I was always on the trading block. They were always telling, kind of keeping me on edge. And then finally one day we're the best team in the NBA. And then 60 games into the season, they start PJ Tucker instead of me. And then this is kind of the story of PJ Tucker. Now, the game has evolved, but you know, one regret is I wish I stood my ground a little bit more and instead of being the nice guy and sort of handing off my role, and then an injury happens and then all of a sudden I'm not even playing anymore. So After that, I sort of let my emotions get the best of me, and I kind of demanded a trade, and I went to Phoenix, and then that was even worse, and everything kind of went downhill from that exact moment. So I definitely have regrets about that time in my career, but at the end of the day, it's like, man, I'm very blessed and fortunate, but would I like to be still playing in the NBA? And if I made a few other decisions, like, you know, I could have potentially went to the Kings instead of Houston. Yeah, that, what would my life look like now? Yeah, I think about that sometimes, but anyway, that was a long answer for your question.
Well,
there, but yeah, but
I get you. And I understand the reason, because you were just talking about the Kings. I believe that there were, and I don't know how true they were, but I had heard rumors as well that when you were in Houston, that the Kings were interested in you, and we were all hoping that obviously that would happen. Could you imagine towards the end of your career, if you had the opportunity to play in front of your friends and your family every night, and how special that would have been?
I would have loved that, you know, very end of my career when I didn't have the pressure of a $20 million a year contract. You know, I would have, that was sort of where I was hoping I would have a, you know, maybe a league give me the veteran minimum and I can play a little and be a part of the team. And I would have loved to be a part of the community and the organization. I mean, yeah, to put on a Kings jersey was, it's crazy because it almost felt like all of their jerseys were wearable, and then the Kings jersey was above that. Like, I can't touch that thing. Like, that's not real. You know,
right. Just
growing up, it was a fantasy, you know, to think about wearing one of those.
Speaking of a fantasy, you won a championship at Arco Arena in high school for Oak Ridge. If you look back at your entire playing career, whether it was when you picked up a basketball for the first time or going through middle school or at Oak Ridge Cal, the NBA. But I mean, that just has to be an unbelievable highlight for you and what you all accomplished back then.
It was, especially given the legacy the Kings had and sort of just the, man, that was our mecca of sports growing up, to win a championship and to have everyone tackle each other like right on the Kings logo at center court.
It was
an experience I'll never forget. And man, I mean, some of those buddies are I'm still really close with a bunch of those guys on that were on that team. And actually I wanted to tell you about this. So one of the guys, a little segue here that I played with on that team, we actually made a movie through the pandemic, and we're going to do a premiere at the Crest Theater on September 24th. Have you ever been to the Crest?
Yes, I sure have.
Theater?
Love it. Love it. Yes.
Yeah. It's this 900 seat theater. It's awesome. But, yeah, his name's Billy Nunes. He's been one of my best friends
for
really my whole life. But, yeah, another one of my passions in life, Grant, has been making music. I don't know if we've ever talked about this,
yes,
but I love movie music, really. You know, from when I was young, I've always loved John Williams and Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And I made the music for this movie and I produced it and my buddy directed it and
awesome.
Wrote the script, and we're going to premiere it. And hopefully, you know, we're talking with some people to try to get it onto some streaming services or do the film festival route. But anyway, I had to sort of plug that right there, Grant.
Yes, you should plug that. September 24th.
So, September 24th at the Crest Theater, and I'll post something on my Instagram soon. If anybody wants to, I'll send a link if you want to buy a ticket and come, because it'll be a fun night regardless, even if you love the movie or whatever. We want to hear the feedback. But okay, anyway, back to that now. My buddy was in the dog pile at half court for the championship game at Arco. No, but a lot of great memories, man. A lot of great memories. That really, that kind of the time of winning that state championship was really the first time I kind of realized maybe I can play at the next level. So that was probably the most exciting time of basketball in my life.
Hmm. You're only 34. You love being a dad and a husband, you know, a one-year-old and a three-year-old. But, you know, you're going to get an itch at some point to do something else. If I asked you to look into your crystal ball, what do you think you'll be doing when you're 40 or 45 or 50 or whatever? What's in the future for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's great that we just talked about it because really, I have music. I mean, I've come from a really musical family, so I never kind of, I played about 10 instruments growing up, and I kind of changed one out after I'd get bored really quickly. So I love kind of creating a whole sound, or a symphony orchestra is my, I'd go to the symphony with my dad, quite a bit. And so to make music or to score a film or, you know, hopefully we can keep running with these movies. Because it was a pretty low budget film, we'd love to obviously get a backing, and if I could be in my 40s composing some music, you know, enjoying my family, that sounds like the dream. And maybe having a little land where I can just sit out and you know, that's sort of our, my wife and I, it's her dream to have sort of a little ranch, and that sounds pretty nice. So that would be the dream. Yeah, making music with the family.
That's
out on
awesome.
The ranch.
I got to tell you, one of the coolest events that I ever went to, I was covering the Super Bowl when it was in Houston for the first time. And for one of the events, they had Yanni and his orchestra. And I got to tell you, that was one of the most amazing things I've ever witnessed, being in there and watching that. That was to see that orchestra in sync and Yanni, that was one of the most amazing things, honestly, that I've ever been to.
Yeah, it's incredible. Absolutely. Watching live music like that, you can't help but have it touch you in some way, you know. Have you ever been to the Hollywood Bowl, Grant, in LA, in Hollywood?
I have not been to the Hollywood Bowl. That is something I have not experienced.
That's a venue, man, that you have to experience in your life. It's pretty amazing, and it's outdoors, and it's just special. You know, being so close to the city, it's pretty spectacular.
You just said it's something that touches you. You have touched a lot of people in El Dorado Hills, in Sacramento. Your stories, what you went through, your openness. Again, that story at Arco that night will stay with me forever. Not to get off on a tangent, but I had Sean Salisbury on my podcast a couple of months ago, and Sean and I have gotten to be very close. Played quarterback at USC, big star at ESPN. Mm-hmm. He and John Clayton had a thing called Four Downs, and then Sean hit rock bottom, and he told the story on Christmas morning of driving from Dallas to Houston, and long story short, he's on the highway and he passes a homeless person, and he was driving for a little bit longer, and he said, you know what, it's Christmas morning and I'm going to turn around and I don't know if he'll even be there when I get all the way back there. And the guy was still there, and he rolls down his window and he says, hey, he goes, listen, here's $100. Please, you know, do something nice for yourself. And the guy looks at him and says, thank you. And Sean starts to drive away, and then he stops and he says, where are you going? And he goes, I'm going to Katy, Texas. And Sean had a pickup truck. He goes, throw your stuff in the back and hop in. This was the start of a lifelong friendship. Sean took him in, ended up living with Sean, got him all new teeth, got him a new Social Security card, got him a job. His name is Russell. He's now part of every family function, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And I had an individual, after I had Sean on, send me a message on Twitter, a direct message. And it was a long, long message. And basically said that he was in despair. He was 41 years old and he was thinking of ending it all. And he said that after hearing Sean's story, and this gentleman had said he was out of work and his family had basically disowned him and he was on an island and he had nothing. And he said that after listening to that podcast, it gave him a renewed sense of faith and hope. And he thought he was going to change his life around. So when you say, if you can just change one person's life, if you can just make an impact, and we all like to make an impact with more than one, but I'm thinking about everything that happened to me. And over the last 24 months, you know, if my podcast truly did save someone's life, then to me, you know what, Ryan, it's worth it. And that's how I think people need to go through life. And I know you agree with that as well.
Absolutely. Man, that's an incredible story. And yeah, you hit it on the head. I mean, we live in a world right now where so many people are trying to tear each other down and everybody's just looking out for themselves. And it's sad that it's almost shocking when you hear a good Samaritan story. And I mean, there's plenty of times when I'm not the greatest Samaritan, or I don't stop and help somebody as well. I mean, but like you said, I mean, it's just takes one time or trying to empathize. Yeah. Where's the empathy in the yep. world today?
Great point.
I think that's the biggest issue, and there's a whole lot of other issues, but, man, yeah, it's a very strange time in the world right now. And yeah, if you can change one person, or if somebody listening to this can just think about that word empathy, I think that's incredibly important, and it can change your whole day. It makes you feel a whole lot better than driving around all day with this anxiety and frustration. You know, I think that's where the world has come to. So I love what you're doing, Grant. I love your message, and you've always inspired nothing but joy and to me and to all my family and friends. And I love you, Grant. You're the best.
Thank you.
Really, you are the best.
Well,
and you deserve the best.
Well, you've given so many people some great memories back in the Sacramento area, and watching your career, but really more than that, watching the type of person that you are and what you've done for so many others with your own tragedies and your own life stories is pretty remarkable to me. And I said this before you came on when I was promoting you last week. I said, I will tell you, whenever I used to have you on my radio show, I used to get the most amazing feedback. People just loved how you do interviews, and I was always grateful when you made the time for me. So listen, I'm happy for you and your family life, and we'll do this again in the not too distant future. But I just want to thank you, man. You're class A all the way across the board, and I just respect the heck out of you. Thank you so much.
Same goes to you, Grant. I respect you too, man. You're the best. Anytime you want to talk, I'm here. Anytime. I love it. I'll come on your podcast weekly if you want. If the people want,
you
know. Anytime, Grant.
Hey, listen, you have a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old. Be very careful what you are saying.
Hey,
we both
just said I need a little time away from the kids. I'm here all day. I get this hour with you or whatever, Grant. I need more time.
Hey, folks, let's face it. After a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I've got to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. And hey, I'm not going to lie, I'll be honest with you. I was a little on the fence about ZBiotics initially, but then just recently, I was at my buddy's 60th birthday party. They had rented out a restaurant for the entire night, so I gave it a shot. Let me tell you something. It's the real deal. Vacations, weddings, birthdays, reunions. Hey, there's a lot going on. Get the most out of your spring plans by stocking up on pre-alcohol now. Go to zbiotics.com/grant to get 15% off your first order when you use Grant at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money back guarantee. So hey, if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember, head to zbiotics.com/grant. Use the code GRANT at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times. What a phenomenal conversation with Ryan Anderson. What a class act. And I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. But maybe I'll take him up and have him on every week. He is just a fascinating person. Now time for our Crowd Ultra Q&A. Go to crowdultra.com and maybe I'll answer your question on Friday's podcast. Tony wants to know, if Deshaun Watson gets a longer suspension, will the 49ers have more trade leverage with Garoppolo? As I record this, there's still no word on the appeal, whether it's going to be more than 6 games. Yeah, I would think that would be a possibility for the Cleveland Browns and Jimmy G. So perhaps. Josh asked, do you agree with Brandon Jennings saying only a couple NBA players actually love the game? I didn't hear Brandon Jennings say that, but if he did, he's delusional. That is stupid. And again, I find that hard to believe that he said. Are you sure that you're hearing this correctly, that only a couple of players actually love the game? No, I don't believe that at all. Kevin asks, are you surprised that Fernando Tatis was on PEDs? No, I'm not surprised whenever I hear a player that's cheating. It's part of the world that we live in. And even though there's an 80-game suspension, players still feel like they can do it and get away with it. I saw Tatis's apology, what the reason was. I'm a little skeptical. Got to be honest with you. Matt wants to know, do I think the Field of Dreams game will return in 2024 since they can't do it next year? Yes, I would be shocked if it does not return. Rob asked, do MLB teams need better security after seeing Diamondback fans run on the field for over a minute? Probably, but I'm not really sure what you can do to avoid that situation. I mean, how many security do you need and then at what cost? And I mean, I'm not really sure what the answer is there. Luke wants to know who's going to be the starting quarterback of the Steelers. Still undecided. Pickett looked pretty good over the weekend, but, you know, it's only one preseason game, so let's not get carried away just yet. Derek asks, is Tyreek Evans one of the best inside scoring guards of all time? All time? Probably not. All right? Was he very good at getting to the basket and driving and scoring? Yes. Of all time? I would say probably not. All right? I mean, it depends on how many you're talking about. Are you talking about top 20? Yes. I mean, when you say one of the best of all time, you know, to me that means like, are you top five? No, he's not top five in that department, in my opinion. Jay wants to know, do the Bazemore and Cook signings have anything to do with Vivek's Warriors obsession? You know, with Vivek, you never know. Now, in all fairness, Kent Bazemore was on the team a couple of years ago and played very well. But we do know Vivek is obsessed with everything Golden State Warriors. So who the hell knows? Good question. And that is our Crowd Ultra Q&A. Just go to crowdultra.com. And again, maybe I'll answer your question on my next podcast.
It's time for Brent.
Well, yesterday, Titans outside linebacker Bud Dupree pleaded guilty to a lesser assault charge in Nashville. He was sentenced to 6 months of probation. He had been cited with misdemeanor assault in January. The Nashville Police Department said that there was a verbal altercation between he and some individuals who had entered the store. The subjects then re-entered the store with Dupree, who allegedly grabbed the employee and his phone and then was involved in a physical altercation with the employee before leaving. Dupree entering second season with the Titans after signing a 5-year, $82.5 million contract as a free agent last year. So here's what I am hoping that we see on the back of his helmet this season. Bud Dupree, how about wearing a Stop Hate decal on the back of your helmet? Because I know, and so many others know, that will solve all the problems of our country. And that's my rant for today. That is my podcast for today. What a great episode with Ryan Anderson. I hope you enjoyed that. It was phenomenal. Love having him on. Love talking with Ryan whenever I can. Make it a great day. And thank you so much for checking me out here. If you don't like that, with Grant Napier.